Yud Sivan, Sunday. Lady Shir Shar HaBechina will be starting shortly. I'm hitting the pause button, so you probably won't be able to tell. But if it doesn't work, we'll be starting in around 1 minute. Okay, we're doing Chavis Halvoda Shar HaBechina, and he's talking about we're supposed to take out of all of this is to, you know, another thing you gain out of Shara Bechina, besides everything else we've talked about, is just the very fact that you learn to look at everything and say, why? I wonder why it's like that. And you don't take anything for granted. Everything has a reason and a cheshbon. And you look at everyday things and you say, wow, I wonder why Hashem made it that way. Why does Hashem make night? Why is it dark? What do we gain out of it being dark? What do we gain out of different seasons? Why are seasons different? Why can't all seasons be the same? Why can't it be eternally springtime? Why can't it be eternally springtime? Why can't a baby be born and, you know, come to be self-sufficient within a few months like animal babies are? Why does it have to have this whole process of taking 40, 50 years to become self-sufficient? At least that's my children. Why does it take so long to become self-sufficient? And why do we have to, like, it's so long, everything, and only by a human, by animals, it's very quick. Everything, why is the flowers this way? Why is fruit, why do some fruit have an inedible peel and some fruit have an edible peel? You learn to become more alert, more aware of everything that's around you, and it's really, I think that in itself is life transformative. You become more appreciative, you become, and you become more inquisitive, and you realize that if you really believe in the Borei Olam, which we do, this is after Shar HaYichud, everything has a reason. Hashem didn't do anything in a backhanded, bedieved way. Yeah, because that's the way it is. It just worked out like that. Nothing just worked out. Hashem is capable of doing anything. And if one piece of the puzzle seems discordant, it's not because, well, that has to be the way it is, because 99 pieces of the puzzle are great. So one piece can be a little discordant. Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom. You know, think like that. Hashem is perfect. And Hashem is capable of doing anything. He could have made the whole world that hundredth piece would not be discordant. Hashem can make an omelet without breaking eggs. Right? There's no such thing. If you have to break the eggs to make an omelet, that's an expression, right? You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. There's a reason for it. Maybe there's a moral lesson there. Maybe there's a moral lesson that everything we do is at the price of something else, that a person can't be perfect, only Hashem is perfect. Anyway, I always like, as our numbers dwindle, I like to remind everyone how chashuv it is to learn Shar HaBechina. Not only is our whole attitude towards Hashem, according to the Chavis Halvavas, our whole attitude, our primary attitude towards Hashem is not one of feeling small in the face of Hashem, who's Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Baharayot. We should feel that, and that's what he teaches us to feel in Shar HaKaniya, the Shar of submissiveness, of feeling so humble. When we think of Hashem, and what am I, and like, we lose our egos. But that's way into the Sefer. You have Shara Yichud, Shara Bechina, Shara Avodas Elokim, Shara Bitochon, Shara Yichud Hamaisa, and then Shara Kniya. I can't say this often enough. The primary relationship we have with Hashem is not one of a servant. Well, it's of a servant, but in the sense of being grateful. Hashem, because in the beginning of Shar HaBitachon, he does compare us to a servant whose needs are filled by the master. And like, it's so important to learn this, and it's so important to repeat it because of the reasons that the Chavis HaLavas himself said in his introduction to the Shar. He said people end up taking things for granted because we're so used to things that, by the time we gain intellectual maturity, by the time we get some seichel in our heads, we're so used to things that we don't even realize that they're there for us to benefit from, to gain from. They're special. Hashem made it with us in mind to benefit us. And number two, the reason number two he said was life is full of problems, so we forget that it's a distinct minority, it's minuscule compared to all the things that go right in our lives, right? That's what he says. That's number two. But people focus on the negative. And the third reason I can't remember right now, I don't want to go off on a tangent. He says three reasons why it's so important to learn Shara Bechina. What I'm saying is that there's an overarching reason, an overriding reason, which he doesn't even mention. He just says why it's so important, because he talks about why it's so hard. Why don't people do it naturally? Why don't we naturally feel this? But the yisod of the whole Shar, and this is, although this is Chiddush, except he was very early. This is a very early Hashkafic work. This is not something written in the last 50 years. This was written over 1,000 years ago. Arguably the first Hashkafa Sefer that exists, because his Rabbeim wrote philosophical Sfarim, proving the existence of Hashem. Not such Hashkafic, and I wouldn't call this a Musar Sefer, I would call it a Hashkafic work, although there's so much Musar in it. Our primary attitude and relationship with Hashem is one of gratefulness. And that's why we have to emulate the Malachim, who spend a whole day and a whole night, thousands and millions of Malachim, and the stars and the everything, thanking and praising Hashem, and talking about Hashem's greatness, and feeling grateful. And that's why you can't learn this enough, because it's not, if you go over to most people and you say, when's the last time you thanked Hashem for your nose? They will laugh at you and make fun of you, or say, you ever go to Rabbi Leno's this year? And you say, yeah, how could you not thank Hashem for your nose? It's unbelievable. And we learned what a nose is. And you walk around, it's like a whole different life. You walk around with a smile on your face, and you're smiling to everybody, because you're on top of it. If you won, whoever won the BCYA sweepstakes, or if you won the lottery, and you won $1 million, you know you'd walk around with a giant grin on your face, and the world is lovely, and the taxi driver that splashes mud on your dress, you don't care. You moichel him right away, because you're so on top of the world, like nothing can spoil your mood, because you have won $1 million. Because although this is trying to get us to realize that Hashem gives every one of us much, much more than $1 million. And we should be walking around, we should be walking on air and feel a debt of gratitude towards Hashem. That's why it's so important to learn this. What I'm saying now also is, what I've added today, because I say this every week, is that you notice things. You're more alive. You notice, ooh, look how this works. Isn't that interesting? Why does it rain this way? And why does it only rain in certain seasons? And why does the food work in the way it works? And what's the wind for? And why do babies get sick so often with ear infections? Like, I wonder why. Well, why is that happening? Everything is from Hashem. Everything is with a reason. The reason is always for the good of mankind. And you become alert. You know, you're not dead. You're walking around like a zombie, just muddling through life, accepting what life gives you. You're alert. It's like you're more alive. That's my point today. You're more alive because you notice things. And I wonder there's so many things like now. The Chavis HaLavas are talking about, why is there night? Why did Hashem turn off the lights for half the day? then you could ask, why are there seasons? Why does it always change? Yes. You see, it's working already. Very good question. Excellent question. And the answer is to teach us what we should be doing. Because to teach us what we should be doing. To teach us, because if I were to say to you, if you knew, I say, who is Oved Hashem? Who is the greatest Oved Hashem there is? You'd say, well, I guess angels, because they don't have anything physical. So I want to look at angels and see what they do, and that's what I want to do. What do angels do a whole day? They praise and thank Hashem. They talk about how great Hashem is, and they express their gratitude for their existence. So, and that's why we say, that's what a person... bottom line, that's what a person's life is made out of, according to the Chayyus HaLavas. Acknowledgement and gratitude and thanking Hashem. And every mitzvah we do, the Chayyus HaLavas says, we do as an expression of thank you. Why are we fulfilling Hashem's will? Not because He's stronger than us, not because He's a king, according to the Chayyus HaLavas, and we're His subjects. That's secondary. Not because He's a master and we're His servants, secondary. Not because He's our father and we're His children, that's secondary. The primary underlying theme of everything we do that's Hashem's will is that's how we pay our debt of gratitude. It's the least we can do. We thank Him. He says, okay, I made you, I created you, this is what I want you to do. Right? Person saves your life, saves your child's life, and then says, what can you do for me? You know, when you wake up every morning, I want you to thank me for saving your child's life. See, that's all. Like, I want to do so much more. I don't know, just every day you wake up, just say, thank you, Mr. Smith, for saving my child's life. That's all. And that's what Hashem does. And the irony is that it's for our sake, not for His sake. Mr. Smith doesn't need our thank yous. This is to make us closer to Him, to bond with Him, and ultimately to live in Olam Haba, bonded with Him. So now, you have to thank Hashem for that. And you have to say, thank you Hashem, and that's what we say in Modim Derabbanon, which I don't know how many of you say, maybe you don't even know what it is. When the Chazan says Modim, there's a little Modim Derabbanon. And the last phrase is Al she'anachnu modim loch, and for that we thank you. And Rashi in Gemara explains that connects to the first sentence, modim anachnu loch. We thank you that we can thank you, because you have to say thank you for that also, that Hashem created us and made us aware of Him and gave us this Chovas HaLavas class. We thank Hashem for giving us the ability to thank Him, for having the awareness to thank Him, because that's what it's all about. So now you can start to understand why the Chovas HaLavas says you can never repay really the debt of gratitude, because the minute you do something, you have to thank Hashem for allowing you to do it, because Hashem is empowering everything you do. And that's okay. That's cool. No one has any tainus to you. That's fine. You do your best, but you're always aware. You never say, I did enough for today. Let me take off a week. How can you take off a week? You're not going to stop breathing for a week. The flowers are not going to stop being flowers for a week. Gravity is not going to stop for a week. Your digestive system is not going to stop for a week. Right? So, okay, getting back to what I wanted to say as a hakdama today, you're more alive. I had a Rebbe, Remendel Kaplan Zatzal, in Philadelphia Yeshiva. It wasn't Shar HaBechina exactly, but he was an older person. He was from Europe. He was friends and chavrusas with Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. If you ever heard of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman Zatzal, I thank Hashem. He was my Rebbe in Philadelphia Yeshiva for 2 years. They left me back. So I was upset at first, but then I was very thankful. Now I'm thankful. I had him for 2 years.
He taught us a lot more than Gemara. He taught us how to observe things and learn from them. And he wasn't a Char HaBechina mode, rather. It was to learn Musar ideas. You go in the street and you see how people act, how they react, how it looks. And you learn from that. Oh, look at that. Look how people react. Look how people interact. Learn from that. The point was, what I gained out of him, I'm not saying I do it. I try to do it. And I'm not even saying I try to do it. Sometimes I try to do it. To be alert. To always be observant. Like I have a bunch of children, B'li'ayin Hara. Two of them have this midah. Not for me, I'm a terrible father. But they have this midah that they observe things, and the mind is working, like they're thinking about it, and they come and they ask questions. I saw this, and how come this is happening, and why is this person acting this way, and is this right, is this wrong? And it's a koach of observation. It's being alive, but really it's a whole facet of being alive, not being dead. Not being blind, dead, you know, you're just muddling through life. So he taught us it just as a, everything is a Musar Sefer. You have to learn from everything you see, which is a Baal Shem Tov idea, really, that everything you see, you're seeing for a reason. Hashem put it there that you should see it and learn from it. That's a Hasidic idea that comes down to us from the Baal Shem Tov. But certainly when you learn Chavis Avov Shara Abachina, you learn to do that about everything. He's talking now about night and why is there a concept of night. You know, I never realized there was a question. I don't know, after day is night. I don't know. Or really, if you're Jewish, you say after night is day, right? Like, what's that all about? And why does it turn dark? And how are we supposed to think of modern day inventions which turns night into day? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What happened? Why didn't Hashem? According to the Chayyus Halvadas, inventions are from Hashem. Don't never think of inventions as being from people. Of course, they're from people as the last link in the chain. But Hashem decided in which period of history to introduce cell phones, to introduce, I'll say fax machines, but then you'll say, like, who cares about fax machines anymore? But I remember the first time I used a fax machine, I felt like making a shecheyanu. I remember using it and why we had to use it, and there was one in the whole Yerushalayim, in the post office. And there was one in the whole Muncie, in some rich guy's business office. And we had to fax something to a base then here in Yerushalayim. And they explained to me what a fax is, and I say, come on, I wasn't born yesterday. You're not going to put in a piece of paper here and it's going to come out there. Why doesn't it fall into the Atlantic Ocean? Come on. I remember it was like a nace. I couldn't get over it, you know, but after you do it five times over the course of 2 weeks, you know, and then everybody has a fax. Yeah, now who? I don't fax anything anymore. Right now everything's scanned. I just scan it and send it by email. But everything has a period of history where Hashem decided it should be introduced to the world. That's what Chaim Zalvavis wants us to, he said it before when he was talking about wisdom. And now he's going to say it again because he's going to say why Hashem made night. So far, okay, let's get back to learning. But I want to stress this. You're alive. It's so gishmak to be alive. You're not, you see things. You're saying, I wonder why the sky is blue. Not why, first of all, it's a great question in a scientific sense. Like, why is it blue? Did someone paint it blue? Like, what makes the blue color of the sky? It's a very difficult question. If you ever heard of Richard Feynman, a physicist, he won the Nobel Prize. He was a pretty, anybody hear of him? Like, brilliant guy. I read about him, his biography, and how his mind worked. And he was just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Mamish, like, come out Einstein. Like, they talked about him, and he was in the door after Einstein. But anyway, I read a book, and he taught the book is about how to ask questions and how people don't think to ask those questions. Why are there ripples in a pond when you throw a rock in? Like, what makes those ripples? So when you say, why is the sky blue? You can ask it scientifically, and believe me, it's extremely complex and complicated. Why the sky is blue? Where does the blue come from? But the Chavis HaVavis is going to talk about it in another few lines, and he's throwing Shar HaBechina. Like, why did Hashem make the sky blue? Why not purple? Why not white? Why not red? Like, what? Everything has a reason, and you have to learn to be alive and alert. And you don't always have the answer. I told you, I had the question for years and years and years. Why does it hurt when a baby teethes? Why does it have, why did Hashem make that it hurts? Why does it have to hurt? Can't the teeth, your fingernails grow, it doesn't hurt. Your hair grows, it doesn't hurt. You grow, it doesn't hurt. There are something called growing pains, right? But teeth, like, oh man, ouch. Like, why? Why? To make rich the guys who own stock in Orogel? Like, that's not a reason. So then someone, Jonathan Sasson, suggested a reason to me once, and it resonated with me, is to make up for the loss of the bonding that the baby has when it stops nursing. As it gets weaned from nursing, that's when the teeth come in, and there's a loss of a bond, and the baby's crying out in pain, and the mother soothing the baby makes that pain. The Chavis HaVavis, we had it before. There's a reason for childhood diseases. Why don't your kids always get sick? It's not your fault, ladies. Why are your children always getting sick? He says, somewhere in the child's mind, it's subconscious, it's maybe beyond subconscious. The child gets used to the idea that life has problems. Amazing thing the Chavis HaVavis says. That's the shot in childhood diseases and childhood, why it's so difficult to grow up and so many gets knocked down. And I would have said maybe to increase the love of the parents. The parents have to become more giving. As the Chavis HaVavis says, one of the most amazing things in the world is the fact that parents put up with children. He says you couldn't pay enough money to do for someone to do what parents do. Right? Clean up the mess that they leave every day, stay up with them at night if they're sick. It's not normal. It's Shar HaBechina, it's a nace, he says. Hashem did it, and we have to recognize it. And now we could start to learn how Hashem loves us. And there's nothing Hashem will stay up with us at night. V'chulu, v'chulu. He says, but it's not normal. It's not normal what parents do for children. It's against all common sense, against all rationality. Anyway, everything you have to look at and see and observe. So let's get back to learning it inside. He's talking about darkness. He says, first of all, time, it would be so difficult. Time, that's how we measure time. We wouldn't know what a week is. We wouldn't know if 3 days went by. What do you mean 3 days? How would we measure time? The basic unit of measuring time is day and night. That's 24 hours. We have some idea of measurement of time. That was the first thing. We learned that already. Then he said, you gotta rest. You know, it teaches you, you can't wear yourself out. You have to rest, so it's dark. See, we don't know what this means, because he's going to talk about artificial light in a moment. He says, but it's dark, and in his day, certainly, when it got dark, you know, you can't do anything. You can't do much. You're going to light a candle, you're going to light a torch. What are you going to do? You can't plow your field when it's pitch black outside. So he says, that's a... What? Yeah. So he said, what are you going to do at night? So he says, first of all, so you're going to rest. So that's the second reason for night. That's a tova. Okay, and then he says, digestion. Right? There's so much going on in the body when the body's awake. Digestion is much more efficient, and most of digestion takes place at night when you're not doing anything. Now, then Rabbi Victor Miller's Zatzal, he points out what the Chavis HaVavis did not point out,
that at nighttime the sun stops its process of working the earth to produce vegetation, and this process stops at night, and the earth gets replenished with kolach. We're not the only ones that rest at night. The earth rests at night and replenishes everything that's in the soil, and the whole photosynthesis process is reversed at night, so that, right, the plants, normally at night, the plants emit carbon dioxide into the air. And that's like breathing in humans, and the whole physical and chemical process is perfectly balanced. So that's what Chazalovitz did not talk about. Then he talked about digestion. And now we're up to artificial light. But, you know, you do need some light at night. Right? What are you going to do? Lasas bo ktsas masav. Sometimes you have to work at night. So it's dark. What are you going to do? Belios bo tzivus lachole. Sometimes you have to take care of a sick person at night. You have to be able to function at night. So Hashem made fire. Fire is a chemical reaction. A lot of chemical reactions in the world. And one of them produces light. Amazing. There's a certain chemical reaction that produces light. It's a mace, and we make a bracha on it every Motzei Shabbos. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Borei Ma'orei Ha'esh. Hashem gave us the gift of light so that we can do certain things at night. And really, in our lives, this is the bracha Borei Ma'orei Ha'esh, but the feeling of gratitude, thank you Hashem for making artificial light, now extends, of course, to way beyond fire. Now it's the electric light and fluorescence and halogens. Like, now we're holding that, you know, it's like, wow, thank you Hashem. It's a big nisayon, and it's a big nisayon because you have to learn to rest. It's a bigger avoda to rest. It's a bigger avoda to go to sleep at night, as we all know with our children, right? They don't want to stay up. It's totally light. Our houses are bursting with light. No difference between night and day, practically. So, you know, okay, so it's in the Sayon. But he's talking about that Hashem gave the gift of artificial light so that we can do what we have to do. You can't blow out the sun, so it's light outside. But with artificial light, you give a blow and it's out. So you light it when you need it, and then you blow it out when you don't need it. But really, it's a nace. I mean, what does he say? The combustion in the flame is the combination of oxygen and carbon to produce carbon dioxide. There's no reason why that combustion has to produce light. So Hashem made it that there's a certain way of producing light. Now, if not too long ago, there was like people said, unbelievable, gas lights, there's gas lights, and people went around, there were street lights, and a guy went around in the street, 150 years, not long ago, a guy went around in the street and he lit the gas lights, and that was considered like, oh my goodness, like not only can I light a fire on a torch or in a candle, but we can have this in the street, and there's a source of fuel, and we can light that, and we can light up our streets. It's not dark anymore out in the streets. This is up until electricity. And electricity came, and Thomas Edison, right, and he said, look what I could do. I could give you an electric light, and look how bright it is, and then came fluorescence, and now we have halogens. So we have to thank Hashem for artificial light. Now, we know that we grapple with, it's become so pervasive and so much part of our lives and so bright that it doesn't any longer have the benefit of the Chag HaSavuot. Well, it still has the benefit that you can turn it off. But we don't, right? We have to turn it off. But that's what artificial light is, says the Chag HaSavuot. It enables us to do something at night when normally we wouldn't be able to. And when we're finished doing what we want to do, so we turn it off, and it's dark again. Now, he talks about the color of the sky. That's what we're up to now. U'minatema, and isn't it amazing, absolutely amazing, she'yamara shamayim, that we walk around the whole day, right? We're under the sky. He says the sky is the most pleasant, easy on the eyes color that there is. He calls it strengthens the eyesight because it's a blue, shunotel ashachar, almost black. He calls it umikocho, and this color hamayuchad lo shumakabetz or ha'inayim umachazko. Not sure what it means. He says this concentrates the eye and strengthens the light perceived by the eye. The blue color allows you to see without straining your eyes. That's what the Chayvus Halbava say. This is the perfect color that through which the sunlight comes, and it's the most pleasant to the eye. The Moyer Mareo Lavan, he says, if the sky were white, it would hurt to look at it. It would hurt, light would eventually hurt your eyes. Hayomazik le'enei balechayim umachlishom, it would weaken them. Red strains the eyes, we know. The sky is a mild color that doesn't present any difficulty to the eye, even if you look at it for a long time. Black would be the easiest, because any light is a strain on the eyes, and black would be the easiest. So the mildest form of light is going to be the light that's closest to black, which is the color of the sky, the blue of the sky, and that's a chesed. Now green, you know, green and blue are very close. And he says, green, this is Rabbi Victor Miller talking now, green is a lovely color too, and puts people in a good mood. It probably triggers subconsciously the idea of vegetation and this food, and that's why we like the color green. And it says that by the Arba Minim, on Sukkot, the Lulav, the Esro, Adasim, it brings joy to a person. It's a time of Simcha, and the green... probably instinctively we associate green with vegetation and with food, and therefore you have blue and green, and the Gemara talks about blue and green, and the tzitzis tcheles is blue, green, indigo, like, you know, these colors, blue and green, are the most pervasive colors in the world, and they minimize eye strain and they make us happy. They put us in a good mood. You can't walk outside on a beautiful, gorgeous day where the sun is shining and there's green and not have a smile on your face. It's almost instinctive and automatic. V'chein shor ha'chokhma b'shor ha'brios. He says, everything you look at in the Bria and study it, is going to show you chokhmas Hashem, His power, His wisdom, and His chesed. We continue. U'meirov tovu alokim ala adam, another kindness of Hashem, Shesam moro'o al shor ha'chayim ha'mazikim. Animals are instinctively afraid of man. Whether it's a lion or a bear, I'm not telling you to go over and poke it in the nose. Then it'll want to defend itself, and you'll be someone's supper. You don't want that. But instinctively, even the most powerful animal will run away from the scent of a man. That's how Hashem made the Bria. It's a pasuk in Bereishis. Umora'achem, the fear of you, the chitchem, also the fear, the dread of you, yi'al kol chayas aretz, v'al kol of hashamayim. Right? I don't care if you saw Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, or you didn't see Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. Right? No, nobody? Come on, admit it, I admit it. Anybody see Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds? So that's apikursus, because that'll never happen. Maybe it's an ace. It's kedai to watch that movie, Chas v'Shalom, to appreciate this, what the Chayvus Halavos is talking about, that it'll never happen. That animals, birds, are instinctively afraid of man, even though if one day they would wake up and say, like they did on the birds, wait a second, we outnumber them like 100-1. We're taking over. It'll never happen. It's kedai to see the movie to see what logically could happen. And it doesn't happen because of the pasuk. Hashem said, no, they will always instinctively be afraid of you. B'chol asher tirmos ha'adama u'b'chol degei hayom, whether it's fish or birds or insects or animals, even a lion and a tiger. When you open the light in the kitchen and you see the cockroach, I know you run away, but really the cockroach is running away faster than you are, right? Right? The cockroach is more afraid of you than you are. The cockroach is like amazed. Maybe the cockroach learned Shara Bechina too. And say, why are people afraid of us? They can just give. Why are they running away? Just go like that and we're finished. So people who set up rat traps, Rabbi Avigdor Miller says, know that they have to put the food in the rat trap with gloves on, because if the rats smell the odor of men, it'll run away. It'll run, it won't go near the bait, because it'll run away from the scent of man. So they put it in with gloves. And he says, look, Kadesh Yatinak Batuach Menachosol, a cat, like, you know, you're afraid, like, is the cat going to attack my child? Cat's not going to attack your child. The cat has, and maybe there are, sometimes it'll happen, but it's the very, very rare exception. The rule is that cats are afraid of people. The Akbar, a rat, is afraid of a person. A rat will not nibble on a person. He won't do it. He's afraid of a person. He smells a person, he runs away. Ba'adomelo. Even bears and wolves and these things that we're afraid of, but they really, there's what to be afraid of. All the Chachamim say, if they think you're attacking them, if they think you're a threat to their children, or you're a threat to their food supply, then they'll defend themselves. But otherwise, you don't have what to be afraid. Kamo Sharbo Zena Zechonim Lebracha, and Chachamim say in the Gemara, and as soon as a person dies, and you know, he looks still just as tall as he was, maybe he was even still color in his cheeks, the mice will come, the rats will come. You have to watch a mace. Part of the reason of Shmir on a mace is that insects don't come. Now, how do the insects know if he's alive or he's dead? It's amazing, says the Chazal Bavos. It's a mace. Shara Bechina. It's a Gemara in Shabbos. Tinek ben Yomo Chai, a one-day-old baby that's alive, you don't have to watch it from mice or rats. You don't have to worry. Og Melech HaBosham. You know Og Melech HaBosham? Oh, a big giant, right? Paul Bunyan, whatever. He's dead? You have to watch his body that the mice shouldn't come and start nibbling on it. Tzorech l'shomer min ha'achbarim. Because of this pasuk, b'morachem v'chitchem yakov. So this is remarkable. As soon as a person dies, he's at the mercy of everything and everyone. The worms are free to take over his body. When he's alive, even lions and bears and tigers avoid him. Amazing. Now the Chayim Shalvavus says something that is spooky. Because we know, we're going to learn the words inside, and we know nowadays that what he said is 1,000 times more true than he realized. The Chayim Shalvavus is about to say something now that we know is so true, and he had no way of knowing it's true. It was apparently true on his level of knowledge, but we know it's so much more true than he realized. It's like scary, spooky that he talks like this. And that is that everything in the world is moving. Now, if you would have asked the Chayim Shalvavus if this table is moving, he would have said, no, I'm not talking about the table. The table's not moving. He says the world couldn't exist without movement, we're about to learn. But he means that's how things combine, and that's how things happen, and they grow. He didn't realize what we do now. Everything is always moving. All of energy is movement. Time is movement. Matter is movement. That's full of molecules and atoms that's moving around. And what determines a solid or a liquid or a gas is the speed of the molecules, right? How fast they're bumping into each other, how fast they're moving. He didn't know that, but he says, he just talks about movement, and he says, the eye can't perceive it. Then there's anything compound had to have movement to bring it about. That he did realize. But you don't see the movement. You know, it just is. So he says, that's amazing. Think about that. Because who's moving the movement? What's moving everything? Any scientist should have that question much more than the Chayim Shalvavus did. Who's moving everything? Like, things don't just move. In fact, one of the laws of whatever it's called says that inertia, whatever it's called, the laws of Newton's law, first, second, third law of thermonuclear, whatever it's called. Right, things don't just move.
So things don't just move, they have, right? Things don't just move on their own, right? It's inertia. If an object at rest stays at rest, that's one of the laws. So how did anything ever stop moving? Hashem. Hashem gave that giant cosmic push. So Hashem pushed real hard. Or, according to some hashkafas, he's always there pushing it. But it's unbelievable that Chavis Alvodas is going to say the words we're about to learn about movement, and we know that it's true about a piece of iron, about a piece of metal, about a wooden block. It's moving. It's right. It's moving. He didn't know that. He couldn't have possibly known that. Chavis Alvodas knew everything. He didn't know everything. We saw from a lot of the biology he says, a lot of the astronomy he says, he was going with what. He was knowledgeable, but he was knowledgeable with the science of his day. And he talks about movement. He could. We know. Wow, it's like almost like a nevuah. We know how true this is. Something you have to know. Mikol habrios, everything in the world, elyona v'tachtona, miktana v'gdola, from the smallest to the largest. Inyan halela masher bos. It's so weird to read this because he didn't know how true this was. He meant it on one level. We know it's true on all levels. Ha'inyan ha'melam asher bo'seder ha'kol, the hidden property by which all of creation is working, v'hashlamoso, and perfected, the einam musug b'chushim agashmiyam, and it's something that can't be picked up with your physical senses, v'hi ha'tnua, movement, ha'dveiko l'chol m'chubar, which was associated, so he said, the chol mechuber, with anything that's attached to something else, or anything that's combined with something else. So how to get there? Something had to move. Something had to, any composite substance had to have movement to get where it is. But today we know that everything is movement. Everything. Time is movement. Time is movement. Energy is movement. Light is movement. Everything is moving. Even a piece of metal, a rock, full of movement. Now, people don't think about this, but we know now that there's molecules, and there's these molecules, iron molecules, and steel molecules, and water molecules. Everything is moving around. But he's talking about things that are attached, things that are composites. And he says, but it's something that's necessary for the running of the world, but the physical senses can't pick it up. He had a scientific mind. The rational mind comprehends that it must be this way. Because everything has to happen through movement. And again, he doesn't mean everything, the way we know that mamish, everything is movement. Asher yasiguhu hachushim. V'lule atru, if not for movement, loyhoisa nigmeres avoya shum dovar menanim tzols. Nothing could come into existence. He means, because everything is really, just about everything we deal with is a compound. So nothing could really come into existence without movement. A very deep idea for his time. V'lo hefseidam, and it can't be destroyed without movement. You couldn't have water forming from vapor. You can't have it freezing into ice. Everything is moving. Now, if you think about it, everything, we grow, right? We started off as a little seed, and then we grew. Then we get buried in the earth, everything in it. The world is like the world is like, it's moving, it's producing. It's like the world produces people. And it produces food for the people, and it produces oxygen for the people, and it produces clothing for the people, and it produces shelter for the people. Hashem made an amazing world, and it's like the motor is always working. It's always working. The Amar Echad Menah Philosophim, the wise men, philosophers, Rome had to void and had tenua over 1,000 years ago. Most of nature is in movement. He said most. We would say all, everything, every little piece of havoya is movement. But isn't it like amazing?
When you understand the mystery of movement, the taskil inyan amitosa, and you perceive its true nature, we have to have a scientific mind like that. Veruchni yosia, and its spiritual character, because the spiritual character is who's moving everything. How did it start? So you realize the ruchnius, the spirituality, that this speaks to us and tells us about, because everything's movement. So how did it start? They say, okay, it's energy. So where did energy come from? The Big Bang. That's the best they can do. And everything we know, we learn, you look, you see, everything has a pattern. Everything is patterned. Everything has a focus. Everything has a purpose. Right? There's no atoms I'm wandering around. No atoms floating around doing nothing. Everything is organization. Every cell, if you study a cell, it's a miracle of movement of organization to produce what it has to produce. The Tedan, you will realize if you study this, you will see, you will recognize Hashem's wisdom. The takir of chemlas habori al bruv, and you'll recognize the kindness of Hashem. Why? Because you will see that the whole system, the whole earth, the universe, produces people, produces oxygen, produces food. Like, the whole world is set up to produce food. Why? Like, photosynthesis, vegetation, growth. We eat meat. Meat is based on vegetation, because the animals eat and grow. There's no meat in the world. Meat is all like the things that grow. Growth is the rain, the winds, the sun. It's amazing. And it works. It works. The food, the earth is a great food producing machine, and it's a great people producing machine, and animal producing machine, and clothing producing machine, and shelter producing machine, so that people can live on this earth. Utterly, utterly amazing. Okay, we'll stop here.